Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein.
Here in the Yeshiva Shalmaila with an hour of Hashkafa, Halacha. You know, the last 2 weeks, well, this week and last week was Hashkafa. We're talking about Nachal Haredi. And, of course, I get a lot of calls, criticism. What happened to Halacha? And when we do Halacha, I get people say, what's with Hashkafa? So these 2 weeks we did Hashkafa. The next 2 weeks we will go back to Halacha, which is really our first love. And we'll be speaking about two topics. Next week is of Shemayis, burial in Eretz Yisrael. Really? Does everybody agree it's so important? At what expense? You have a son in Kail. You have to marry off a daughter. You haven't caught up with your Rabbeim's payments. What comes first? Burial in Eretz Yisrael? How important? Some very surprising opinions. We'll go through the halacha. Following, we'll be speaking about shaving in halacha. All the rubric of the ideas, the whole rainbow, according to many chassidim, it's mamish and issa d'oraisa, according to Bnei Brak. Also, it's an issa d'oraisa, you'll ask of Chaim Kanievsky, you'll ask of course by the chassidim. Then you have Chabad, who believes will go through their shita kabbalistically, and then you have the Litvisha, who allow shaving, go through the raya's discussion, to be quite eye-opening. This week, we will go back to the topic of Nachal Haredi, and we will conclude with a few wonderful guests. We will have Hagoyin Rabbi Yeshua Eichenstein. He was the Makuriv by the Rosh Kibahag, Rav Steinman Zecherno Levracha. He's Rosh Yeshiva of Yad Aaron. He's the Edim of the Rav Yerushalayim, Rabbi Tzal Zolti. And we have to take everything he says really just about as gospel. Rabbi Eichenstein was the Makuriv. We will have the founder of Nachal Haredi, very Erlachid, Rav Tzvi Kleibinoff. He had two more, and it's really quite confusing. It's almost, Rav Eichenstein will say that it was only mamish for the boys who are off the derech, going off the derech, and Rabbi Kleibinoff will say edus about people Rav Steinman sent who are not, and I come away somewhat confused. Look, one thing I will tell you, listening to, notwithstanding the Rabbanim of does seem to be somewhat of a peppery place. I mean, he says, there are many boys who come out who are not from. They went in not from. Many came out not from. But he says, for most part, they improve. But exactly what Rav Steinman's opinion is, the listener will listen and will decide for themselves. Before we go to our show, I would like to say a few things. First of all, this week, Rav Shalom Mordechai Rabashkin, by the last week, was freed. And I'm sure everybody here knows the case. He was convicted on many, many counts of fraud, dozens of counts of fraud, inflating bank statements, etc. He was also charged for, hundreds of counts of illegal welfare, illegal labor, youngsters, etc., which government decided not to press, probably because he got a lifetime sentence. And many frumer people, I would say all frumer people, felt, notwithstanding his crimes, it sounded like a pogrom. Like 27 years for some financial fraud, when people who did billions and billions and billions of dollars got less than him. It touched a raw nerve by so many of Klal Yisrael. This is basically a 21st century pogrom that is happening. So there was a very big simcha, but let me tell you what my hesaf is. More, I don't want to discuss something that's karholchu by hanemushes. I grew up, I went to the great Litvish yeshivas, and Chabad was always, there was the cherem of the Gra neged Chabad. I got older, I traveled the world, I saw the incredible, the footsteps of the great Chabadska Rebbe. But when I grew up, it was like, there's the cherem of the Gra. I mean, they'll tell you, the cherem of the Gra neged Chabad, and Tatman Chabad, forget it, it was like oil and water. And I if I didn't see it, right? If my own eyes, if I really see you, I wouldn't have been an aide. The biggest fundraisers for Shalom Mordechai Rabashkin were in Lakewood. They had literally 10,000 people by the fundraiser in Lakewood. And and in Satmar, I heard aides from people, they said that they literally had 24 Yungalite working round the clock for the last two number of years to try to free him, and getting letters and pushing congressmen. And it's just amazing, like Lakewood, Satma, being mamish, putting all their koiches in for a Chabadsky young man who got an extremely unfair and harsh sentence. And it was last week's Haftira, and I'm looking at the Haftira, and what does it say on Lost in Love, the Nebu of Yecheskel, Vayihi Dvar Hashem Elai Lemer, V'ata Ben Adam, what is it? These week's Parsha, Yosef and Yehuda, you know, the morale, it's Tzadik versus Baal Tshuva. So, you know, all the Torah, there's the Malchus of Yosef, the Malchus of Yehuda, they were at each other's throats. What does it say? Lasad Lavai, Va'ata ben Adam, Kach lecha Eitz Echad, Uksayva Lav li Yehuda, Ulevnei Yisrael Chaverav, Ulekach Eitz Echad, pick another eight, v'ksayv lovely Yosef, eight Ephraim, v'chol beis Yisrael, v'korav oisam echad al echad, v'hoyu lachadim biyadecha. Yosef and Yehuda will be one again. And I'm looking at this, and I said, mamish, what's going on here? Lakewood? The Rosh Yeshiva Malkiel Kotler giving a fiery speech for Rabashkin, the Rebbes in Satmar coming out, and telling guys they should work for, and I'm saying it's mamish motzach da'agitan ashtik achras hayamim. It's something to me I was very moved by, very powerful. Before we go to our show on our program on Nahal Haredi, which I got so many calls, and when we get to that part, I will give a little bit of a sequim of, you know, a lot of the opinions. I have a machshav I want to share with you. You know, we're finishing the story of Yosef. And I have a fantastic diak, not a diak, a Rambam. The Rambam in Perikei of Yisaydi Atayrat Allah Yud writes, what's the example, the dugmada of Kiddush Hashem? So who, if I asked you, who's the dugma of Kiddush Hashem? You would say, Kiddush Hashem, Mestama Dasar Harugim Malchus, Mestama Rebakiva, Mestarkim Sari, Masreke Shal Barzel, or maybe it's the Harugim Lud. That's the Holocaust, the 400 Yeladim of the Gemara Nanizakin who jumped into the water. They didn't want to have they didn't want to be used for Dvar Aveira. So many, right? No, none of the above. Sorry, wrong. What does Rambam write? Yosef Hatzadik. He writes, when he went out from Potiphar's wife, and he was, even though he was so beautiful and handsome, he didn't want to do an Avera. That's the example of Kiddush Hashem. And the Rambam's telling us something powerful. Kiddush Hashem, if you ask somebody, it means Mesiras Nefesh, give over your Nefesh, die for Hashem. The Rambam is saying no. You know what Kiddush Hashem is? Living for Hashem, not dying for Hashem. Don't be Mesir Nefesh, hold on to your Nefesh. The most beautiful person in the world. Bonai Sadeh Alei Shur. I remember when I was a yeshiva bach, it was hard for me to get a date. A Yosef Bonai Sadeh Alei Shur. They jumped on the walls to see him. He was Yefei Tayer V'Yefei Mara, and you know what he did? He was Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. When they see a Jewish person and they say, ah, look at him, he's an example of Menschlichkeit, of Midas. There's the harassment. Let me send my kid to a Jewish office. There's not going to be any harassment there. Geneva, I could. His handshake is his word. Ram says, what's Kiddush Hashem? Living with Hashem, not dying with Hashem. I think it's such a powerful, powerful thought. I want to go now to a clip with somebody who I think has made a Kiddush Hashem. He's been all over the world. He's received honors and awards and TED Talks, etc. Let's go to somebody who's an example of somebody who's Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, not by dying, but like living with Hashem.
We have on the phone with us, from Israel, Eli Beer, who's the founder of United Hatzalah of Israel, and he's also president of Friends of United Hatzalah. United Hatzalah and Eli are somewhat famous, in some parties, infamous, in some places, for not only providing Hatzalah services to Jews, but he provides Hatzalah services for non-Jews as well. And I believe he's received many awards for this, created, you know, a great Kiddush Hashem. So let's hear the story. Welcome, Eli.
Welcome to you too, and to all the listeners.
So Eli, tell us a little bit about I mean, this is an unusual Hatzalah to pick up Arabs. Tell us a little bit about what motivated you, etc. Tell us your story.
Well, when I started Hatzalah in Israel with a few friends of mine many, many years ago, we were young and we cared about protecting our community. We wanted to make sure that anyone that gets hurt or injured or needs help, Chas v'Shalom, someone having a heart attack, within 90 seconds he will get help. But we started in a frum community in Yerushalayim, and obviously everyone was frum. And slowly, slowly, this idea that was existing in New York before us caught like fire in other communities, and people just copied the model, and it started going from city to city, Yerushalayim, Bnei Brak, Tzfas, and other frum communities around Israel. And one day, I had a phone call from a young guy. He's a kibbutznik, not a frum guy. And he was telling me that he volunteers in an ambulance, Magen David Adom, in Israel. He lives in Herzliya, but originally he's from like a kibbutz background. Totally not religious. And he said to me, I see every time I go to Bnei Brak, I see Hatzalah there, but in Herzliya, people can wait 10, 15, and sometimes 20, 25 minutes for an ambulance. He says, what about if we start Hatzalah in Herzliya? So I said to him, listen, you know, it's an interesting idea. You know, let me think about it. It was a little, since Hatzalah was always from people, I didn't know what to do. I said, you know what, it sounds like a great idea because my mission was always, my vision was 90-second response time everywhere, but we never had non-from people. We always helped everyone. Of course, in Israel, if someone get help, if someone need help, we would respond to him and help him, but we never had someone not from in Hatzalah. So I decided I'm going to go to the Gedolim and ask them what do they think, because, you know, it's not such an easy question because, you know, you can always get backlash from the community. So I said, I'll go to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And I went to him and I asked him a question. I said, I have areas in Israel where we want to respond to calls and we don't have enough responders. What do we do? He says, can't you get volunteers? I said, yes, but they're not from. He says, so that's a big mitzvah. Join them to save lives. You're going to have actually a double mitzvah. Not only you'll save lives, but you'll get them to do a mitzvah of pikuach nefesh. I said, great. I have Rav Chaim Kanievsky behind me. So we went over to this guy, Niv Granot. And Niv was totally shocked. We said right away, yes. He said, I didn't believe you're going to say yes to me. I said, not only you could join, I want you to get 25 of your friends to join. I must say that this changed Hatzalah in Israel completely. After a few months, these volunteers from Herzliya started doing courses together with the volunteers in Bnei Brak. And one of the things that we implemented is that every volunteer that joins Hatzalah, even if you're not from, you must do the Halacha course. So the Shabbos, Hilcha Shabbos, you must do, because if you want to save lives and make sure no one else gets offended from you, if you talk on the radio not properly on Shabbos, if you do things that are not according to Halacha, other people feel uncomfortable. So it's amazing how all these other volunteers said, yes, sure, we'll do the Halacha courses. And I think, and I always joke around, that these volunteers took it more serious than the firm volunteers. They thought they know it already. And they actually got better grades in the courses, the Halacha courses, than the firm guys.
Wait, let me interrupt, Ellie. So Reb Chaim Kanievsky said that Hatzalah should pick up irreligious as well, right? Mechallel Shabbos as well, right?
Of course. Reb Chaim Kanievsky said,
I want to ask you a question. A Mechallel Shabbos b'fahesia has a din of a mumma l'chala Torah kula. So why would you halachically be Mechallel Shabbos for him? I mean, I know you're not you may not be a rabbi, but I thought maybe you would notice because it's your sort of your area of business, so to say.
So first of all, we have the suffix that, first of all, every non-firm in Israel most probably is a Tinuk Shanishba.
Okay, I have the Psak of the Chazenish that he's a Tinuk Shanishba. Okay, is that what he's saying, Mechonan?
Yes.
Okay.
And we are Mechallel Shabbos, and we call it Kiddush Shabbos. Every time we go to save someone's life, even if he's totally a Mechallel Shabbos, we're doing a mitzvah by Pikuach Nefesh. For, you know, most probably, it's a Tinuk Shanishba. And secondly, when we go to respond to emergency calls that are car accidents, and even a plane. Every few weeks we have a plane that has an emergency landing. And we have a psak from our Rabbanim that are backed by Rav Eliashiv and others that we must respond to these emergency calls. It's first of all, it does an amazing job in Pikuach Nefesh with saving lives. We go out to 900 emergencies every day. But secondly, it's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem seeing volunteers with tzitzis and payas and other volunteers who completely not with tzitzis and payas and not with the yarmulke wearing the Hatzalah symbol and responding together to save people's lives. And we got all the Rabbanim behind us, all the big Gedolim behind us. Rav Eliashiv, of course, was totally, you know, he helped us start the organization many years ago. Rav Moshe Halberstam was our Nasi Halacha, and we had all the backup for everything we do. But it was a very interesting concept because it's not halachically to join a non-firm people was not only the problem of halacha, was what the people would say. It was like a very weird change for Hatzalah because we were always people with yarmulkes on our heads. And I think that was the biggest change we did in Hatzalah. That was the first change we did, joining non-religious volunteers to Hatzalah. And it made a huge Kiddush Hashem. And I could tell you that the volunteers that joined us, many of them, were so, they didn't know anything about Judaism, literally nothing. They didn't even, Yom Kippur, they would probably eat pork. And it changed their lives. It changed their lives knowing that they actually got to know from people. In Israel, they have tremendous hatred between religious and secular, Haredi and secular, tremendous hatred. And I could tell you that this changed the organization, changed a lot around us, the surroundings. And we decided, after about a year of operations, that we're changing because of this added value that, you know, we added to the organization. We changed the name from Hatzalah to United Hatzalah. That's where it started.
And United meaning the Tinnik Shanishbiz as well?
Of course. This is Ichud Hatzalah, we call it. United Hatzalah. And it was an incredible change for Hatzalah because we had 700 volunteers there. And we were only in the firm communities. And we would respond to lots of emergencies. A lot of them were not for firm people. Someone got hurt. Like Hatzalah in America, they respond to everyone that needs help that calls them, but we never had non-responders in Hatzalah who were not from.
Wow.
So that thing was a huge change. It was not easy. It was a lot of politics in the beginning. A lot of people were not happy. Some people wanted to leave, but I was very, very serious about this. I said, listen, I have the backing of the Gedolim. We're not talking about politics here. We're not talking about building a club together that people are going to come play cards. We're building a club for saving lives. This is, we're talking about my life, my children's lives, my parents, my family, my everyone around. Chas v'shalom, someone is in trouble. We want to make sure we get there 90 seconds. The only way to get there 90 seconds is if we use every resource available who could help. And if you have hundreds of people who want to help who are not from, we're talking about Pikuach Nefesh. But it led to something interesting. We had a call in Mea Shearim of a very chash of a rav in Mea Shearim. And in a shul, he had a cardiac arrest. And all of a sudden, we had two Hatzalah volunteers that arrived that are not from. And they see Hatzalah on them, and everyone in Mea Shearim are looking at Hatzalah. Without, maybe they thought maybe the yarmulke fell off when they jumped off the motorcycles, because we use ambicycles in Israel to get there fast. And they come in, and they're starting CPR in the middle of a shul in the center of Mea Shearim. This is like, I think Satmar is reform compared to that shul. And the people are looking, and they were able to get his pulse back and his breathing back within a few minutes. And everyone in the shul is saying, who are these guys? And they see them coming out of the shul without a yarmulke. Like, they thought in the beginning they lost the yarmulke running, but why aren't they wearing a yarmulke? And all of a sudden they said, Ma, yesh chilonim be'atzalah. And all of a sudden, they started talking to these guys and starting this. And these volunteers told me later that they never thought they're going to be respected so much in Mea Shearim so much. And they thought, these guys are not so bad. They're not so bad like we thought, because all they see in the newspaper are terrible things about people in Mea Shearim.
So your chiddush was twofold, Eli. I just want to read halachically. One was that the Chazei Nish's psak of Tinnik Shanishba was accepted by everybody and was accepted to the point that you're allowed to be Michal Shabbos for a Tinnik Shenishba, that he has a din of a Yisrael Kosher, that's A, and B, that you were with Reb Chaim Kanievsky's Haskama, you took Freie people into work side by side with the Fruma for the purposes of Atzolos, of Pikuach Nefesh, you had two Chidushim in Halacha. So how did you extend it? How did you extend it to Arabs?
So this is already the point where when we did this, it started hitting all the newspapers. All of a sudden, everyone, Yediot Achronot, you know, a lot of Haaretz newspaper and different newspapers starting to write articles. They never heard of a tzela before, and they started to write the beautiful thing about volunteers jumping out of their home, and they're writing beautiful things about the film community where they came up with the idea. And I always mentioned that where it started from was Williamsburg, and people actually enjoyed it very much to hear it on TV and different things. And one day I get a call from a guy, Murad Aliyan. He's an Arab living in East Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, next to, I don't even know the name. It's a neighborhood that I wouldn't hang out there. I wouldn't go shopping there. And he calls me up. He wants to meet me. He's coming together with a friend of his, Muhammad Asli. And they're coming to meet with me. And I didn't know what it was for, maybe business or other things, you know. And he said to me, listen, Muhammad's father had a cardiac arrest last week. They waited for 55 minutes for an ambulance. And he said, listen, my father, in front of our eyes, he was 52 years old. He died in front of our eyes. We had my brothers and sisters, all younger, also my father died, and we were just waiting for an ambulance to come. Now, because of the situation, the security situation in Yerushalayim in certain areas, an ambulance can just walk into to an area without any escorts. You know, so they had to wait for an escort, and it took time and everything. And what happened was that. That he died, and he says, let's start Hatzalah in East Jerusalem. And I was already, okay, that was I had the secular people in Hatzalah, but what do I do now about these Arabs? And he says, listen, if I have a group of volunteers saving lives in my community, we're going to come help you in your communities if you need help. So I said, it makes a lot of sense, but that was a little above my head already.
Sounds a little meshuggah to me, quite honestly.
It is meshuggah, but I said to myself, I don't know if you remember, they had a situation with the yeshiva bachos from Mir that were on the way to the Kaisel, and they were almost lynched, and it was advertised in the New York Times that these two guys were almost lynched, and they had a picture of them in the New York Times saying that Israeli police are beating up Palestinians, and it was really yeshiva bachos that were getting lynched by Arabs. And this guy Muhammad says, listen, we'll protect anyone that needs our help. If anyone needs help, no matter who he is, Israeli, a soldier, an Arab, we'll go help. We'll be your people here in East Jerusalem. And that was something that I was so moved from how they said that. I said, you know what? I'll go to the Rabbanim again. And I asked the Rabbanim again, and they said, listen, this is a great opportunity for you. First of all, because Yerushalayim is so complex, and you have so many problems here, and also Shabbos, you need help on Shabbos. A lot of emergencies that come into Atzela are not real pikuach nefesh. These people are willing to help you for these things. Why not join them? And we went ahead, and we started a course with 20, I think it was almost 30 volunteers. We started a course. A lot of them knew very little Hebrew, so we got someone who knows a little Arabic to start the course. And they did very, very well. A lot of these volunteers originally were nurses, or they had some medical background, and a lot of them work in the hospitals, and you know that they have a better medical background, so we took them. And, well, after they finished the course, they started volunteering in their community, and they started saving lives. Now, about a year later, my father, on a Shabbos afternoon, he was a chashev, very chashev yid. His name was Rabbi Gabriel Beer. A lot of people know him. Probably a lot of listeners knew him. And while he was at home eating Shabbos lunch, He had a cardiac arrest, and I was two buildings away from him. I ran there, and the neighbor called me, and I ran, and I saw my father on the floor, and I started crying when I saw my father on the floor. I saved many, many people's lives with my own hands, and I didn't know what to do. I forgot everything I knew, and I felt like I'm in a bad dream. And my father had no pulse. He had a cardiac arrest. So after about a minute, a Tzela volunteer who lives across the street. He lives across the street. He runs there. He's Yaakov Rosenberg, his name is, and he just runs and he starts CPR my father, but he didn't have a defibrillator. And 20 seconds later, a volunteer runs into the house, Muhammad Asli, runs into the house. He was on the way to work. He was driving his car. He heard that Tzela call. And he comes in with a defibrillator, and he says, "Eli, I came to help." He didn't know who it was, my father. They were doing CPR, and then two other volunteers joined. 9 minutes after, my father regained his breathing and, his pulse, and he woke up. And this is, I'm looking at them, and I say, what a surreal picture it is to see these Frum volunteers together with the Arab and the defibrillator. Just a year ago, I joined him to Hatzalah, and he came to save my father.
So an Arab saved your father's life?
An Arab saved my father's life.
Wow.
And I said to myself, and I gave, of course, a hug to him, and I said, you know what? They always, Shlach lach macha p'nei amayim, you know? This is something that I never imagined, that when I joined Hatzalah, when I joined these Arabs to Hatzalah, I never thought one day it's going to come back to me. And a few months later, they had a terrorist attack in East Yerushalayim where they shot two soldiers that were there. And you can't just go into a terrorist attack that happens in East Yerushalayim. It's not so simple to just go in. And while the shooting was still going on, and the soldiers are shooting back on the terrorists, and the terrorists are shooting, no ambulance, no Israeli ambulance, no Hatzalah volunteer from Yerushalayim will go in there. It's too dangerous. But who went in there? These Arab Hatzalah volunteers ran in. And they were working on the soldiers. They stopped their bleeding, and they saved their lives.
Tell us your best Kiddush Hashem story, or some of your good Kiddush Hashem stories, you know, both with Jews and non, but particularly by the Umay Sa'ilam. You know, we as a community in America, sadly, we've had our share of Chilul Hashem. Tell us a story of, you know, Kiddush Hashem, where you said, hey, you know, people were looking at me and they said, you know, Baruch Aleikai Hashem and Ben Shetach.
I'll tell you something that I'm very, very proud of. They have a volunteer in Ramat Eshkol in Yerushalayim by the name of Nachum Bernstein. And he was after Yom Kippur 2 years ago. I saw a picture that was going on Twitter, and someone sent this to me. I don't have Twitter. I have now, but then I didn't have it. He sent to me a picture of a volunteer of yours driving an ambucycle on Yom Kippur with a talis. And I said, this is weird. And I saw the picture, and I said, why is he driving an ambucycle with a talis? You know, it's weird. I called Nachum and I said, Nachum, what's going on with you? Are you crazy? What are you driving in the talis? He said, I had a call of kids playing a bicycle. They were driving, you know, in Yerushalayim, everywhere around the country. Yom Kippur is called Chag Al Fanaim because the secular Jews in Israel don't drive cars on Yom Kippur. I would say 90% of them. So the streets are empty. So the kids, they're driving bicycles. They're riding bicycles everywhere. One of these kids, he was a kid 5 years old riding a bicycle. He fell off like a little 10 feet ditch. And he hurt himself really, really bad. He fell on his head. He said, I was in shul. And I was in the middle of davening. And all of a sudden I get the call. A kid fell off a ditch. You know, I have to go save him. He says, the rav of shul saw me running out of the shul. He said, and he saw me taking off my tie. He says, no. You wear your talis when you go save a life on Yom Kippur. Do a Kiddush Hashem. And he said, I wore my talis while I was driving the ambucycle. He says, everyone was looking at me. They had a tourist from Germany who took that picture. And he put it in his tweet. It went all over the world, this tweet. I have it, actually, this picture on my business card. I put it in my back of my business card. And this is something that I got hundreds of phone calls and emails and people who were not.
And I have a raya to your rav. the Shach in Minyaradeya, I don't have a Shulchan Aruch in front of me. It's Shin Mem Beis, Shin Mem Gimel, and that zip code says that if a Yisrael was Nerag by a Reitzeach, who's by an Akum, he says, and there's blood on the clothing, even though usually you don't bury the clothing, you don't bury a person with the clothing, he says, since in this person, the vision of the person with the blood-soaked clothing is such a cry, the Shach Paskins, he says, you bury this person with his clothing on. So I'm showing to a Shach in Yeridea to the Psak of Yerov. Tell us another story of Kiddush Hashem.
Look, Yisur, I'm just going to talk about tonight. You know, in Bnei Brak we had, in a big highway in Bnei Brak, we had a bridge fall just a few hours ago on a truck. And I could tell you I was busy with that for the last 3-4 hours. We had dozens of volunteers, and they're still there, actually, because the person that was under the bridge in a truck was trapped, and for hours and hours they couldn't get him out. And who was there to help the people that were injured? Everyone saw it on television. I got a phone call from one of the biggest business people in Israel, who's a totally secular person. And he says, "Atalselti ge'el liyot Yehudi." I said, "What happened?" This guy is the biggest builder in Tel Aviv. He builds all over real estate in Tel Aviv. He calls me up, and he says, "Listen, ani ge'el liyot Yehudi. I see these guys climbing on the trucks and on the vehicles that were injured. The people were trapped, and they're wearing tzitzis coming out of their pants." And he said they have these beards and the yarmulkes. And he says, all day I hear bad things about from people. All day. I see this, and I see how many hours. It was live TV showing these volunteers of United Hatzalah underneath the bridge, putting their life in danger to help other people, just from tonight. And I said to myself, I did something right. You know, this whole thing about Hatzalah, that we're not serving only our community. We're serving everyone. We go into people's homes. I myself, sometimes, I came in once on a call and to a totally secular person in Tel Aviv. They call for an ambulance. We come, we get the calls from every ambulance organization in Israel. They give us the calls because they know we get there much quicker. So this person had his wife had a cardiac problem, and we got there very fast. Within 2 or 3 minutes, we were by them. And they opened the door, and this other guy that was with me had a long beard. He lives in Tel Aviv. And he's a frum guy with a beard and payas. And he got scared. He said, Lolo, I didn't call Chaver Kadisha. I didn't call Chaver Kadisha. And he was about to close the door on our face. I said to him, listen, what are you talking about? Chaver Kadisha, we had Tzala, Yichud Hatzalah. He never heard of us. He said, Mother, he was so scared to see this guy with a beard. But after a few seconds of explaining him what's going on, he opened the door and we started working on this guy's wife. He was shocked to see the professionalism. We had all the machinery with us. We had medications. We had everything. And the ambulance came 20 minutes after. And they saw this whole thing in their house. It's hard to explain Americans that don't go through what we go through in Eretz Yisrael here and the diversity that they have. It's unbelievable to see, because all they hear is the hatred from people. And also they see a guy was with a beard. A second ago, they thought about him as a Chaver Kadisha, and all of a sudden, he's like the biggest professor for him. And
now, I saw Ellie, that you won in Davos an award for Hatzalah, and it was the Queen of Jordan, Queen Reina of Jordan, gave the award. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so I'll tell you what. A couple of years ago, I got a phone call from the World Economic Forum that they want to give me an award called the Social Entrepreneur of the Year. So I didn't exactly know what Davis is, because, you know, it's not my circle. I don't go around in these places. I never did before. And they said I have to come to Jordan. It's a Young Global. It was two awards, Young Global Leader and Social Entrepreneur. And anyways, one of the things I have to do is go to Jordan to get this from the Queen Rania of Jordan. So, of course, I go there, and they had a lot of people there because it was a big convention of the Jordanian government together with the kingdom and the World Economic Forum, and I get there, and I'm the only one wearing a yarmulke. And I'm walking around with a yarmulke, and I see the king, and of course I knew I'm going to see him, so I gave him the bracha. You have to say when you see a king, it's a special bracha. You probably know all the halachas about
it. I believe, yeah.
Yeah, and then he said to me, "Thank you very much." I explained him what it was. He said he heard it before. And then when I went to do a presentation for the Queen, I was only a few people in the room. And it was a very awkward situation because she is a Palestinian. She's not a big lover of Israel. And husband's more, you know, I wouldn't say, I don't know if the best friend of Israel, but he's a lot friendlier than her. She never had a good relationship, never something friendly. But when she heard about what I said and I told her about the fact that we have Jews and non-Jews and Christians and Arabs that are volunteering in the organization, it touched her very much. And she was asking more and more questions. And then she said to me, "Why don't we start this in Jordan?" I said, "Of course, I would love to start this in Jordan." And that was like the presentation. And when I went to Davos, I spoke about this and had a lot of people there. And I could tell you that they had a few people speaking, and this was the number one talk. I wore my yarmulke there, standing on the podium in the World Economic Forum where all the people, the biggest business people in the world are there. And I'm talking about Hatzalah, where we all know and very proud of what Hatzalah does. And I'm talking about mostly about the idea of the 90 seconds volunteers. We have technology. We're the first ones in the world to create technology before Uber, before everyone else, to locate people based on GPS. And we actually have a technology that locates the five closest volunteers within 3 seconds to every emergency. So I was talking about that, and then I was talking about the Jews and Arab volunteers. I had people come over to me. One guy was from Saudi Arabia. He's a CEO of the biggest oil company in Saudi Arabia, the government oil company. And he said to me, "I can't get over what you said. I never met an Israeli before. I never had a conversation with an Israeli before." He says, "I want to give you a hug."
Eli, let me just share with you. You know, there's a Yerushalmi in Adarim, and I don't remember if it's Perek Zayin or Perek Tes. I don't have a Yerushalmi. I'm sort of in the office. But it says that there's a machlekes in the Gemara. The Gemara says, and Yerushalmi says, one man the Yama says, what's the biggest pasuk in the Torah? He says, "V'haftal areicha kamaicha." Most right, love you. You say, what did Rabbi Akiva say? You know, "Klal gadol b'tayra." So Ben Zayma said, "Yeshvi klal gadol mizeh." And the way the Pnei Moshe learns, he says, "Ki b'tzelem aleikim ases adam."
Wow.
So the Pnei Moshe says, "What does b'tzelem aleikim have to do with?" With the Haftarach Kamaycha, he says, because from the Haftarach Kamaycha, I would think, okay, L'Reyecha, who's Reyecha, is Amcha, right, is another a co-religionist. So he says, Yeshvi Klal Gadol Mizeh, Ki B'Tselem Eleikim Ases Adam. Every human is B'Tselem Eleikim, Ben Zayma says, right? So is it possible that besides the Kiddush Hashem and the fact that maybe they'll be mative to Yidin, but is this also an Indian that you're saving at Tzelem Aleichem? Could that also be a possibility?
Definitely. That's always, when I speak in front of my volunteers, the firm ones and the secular ones and the Arabs, I always mention, I never mention the Yerushalmi or whatever, I just mention B'Tzelem Aleichem Yivradam as the concept of Atzela. And when I always talk about, if you listen to my TED Talk, I said, when the Arabs came to me and they asked me to join, I said to myself, when I started Hatzalah in Israel, I never thought of saving Jews. I thought of saving human beings. And under the skin, we have the same, exact same blood system and heart system and kidney system. And it makes sense because that's how Jews were always brought up. And I think this is the really, if you think about it, I never really put a lot of deep thinking into it. It really comes before V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. Because then, if you know that B'Tselem Elokim, B'Tselem Elokim Nivra Adam, And then you go after Re'echa Kamocha. You know, Re'echa is every human being. Of course, you have to make sure your family is good and your community is good, but don't forget about the world. And I could tell you today, we had a meeting today in Hatzalah. We have an international rapid response for disasters that we sent the last 20 big disasters around the world. We send the best paramedics of ours and the best rescuers. We sent to Nepal twice. We sent to Haiti. We sent to many different places. We had disasters. And today we had an emergency meeting about sending to Nepal. They had a big disaster in Nepal happen. We said we have to send to Nepal. But thank God, you know, things are under control. But this is exactly B'Tzelem Elokim Nivra Adam and V'Ahavta L'Rechah Kamocha. I'm happy you told me this because I will use it more and more, because really this is V'Ahavta L'Rechah Kamocha is secondary. And, you know, I see it all the time. We actually, and I didn't even mention this, a few years ago, 2 years ago, a mayor of Jersey City, Mayor Philip, called me up, and he asked me to, he called actually me and my chairman, Mark Gerson, and he asked, why don't we start, I heard about what you guys are doing in Israel, why don't we start this in Jersey City? Now, Jersey City, they don't really have a firm community there. And I said to Mark, you know what? Why not? Let's do it there. If they want it so much and he's willing to help, let's do it. And we started a course, and we got everything arranged, and we started an organization there. We didn't want to call it Hatzalah because we don't want ourselves to mix people up with Hatzalah in America. So we call it United Rescue. And now we have over 200 volunteers there, which a majority, I would say 90% of them, are non-Jewish. They have Hispanics, African-Americans, Muslims, and other, you know, of course, many Christians and different Catholics and everything. And they have a few Hasidim. That some of them live in Muncie, but they work during the day, or they live in Monroe, whatever it is. They work during the day in Jersey City. And we were able to do an amazing Kiddush Hashem. It was in the media many times. And I was there. I was blown away for the amount of Kiddush Hashem. I wish I could only take this back with me. Forget about the life-saving I did in my life, but the Kiddush Hashem, what I did in Jersey City, it was incredible to see in the room with this year, we gave an award to the one who went out to the most calls. It was a Hasidish guy from Muncie who goes out to 3 calls a day in Jersey City as United Hatzalah, United Rescue. And all these goyim were in the room. He got this award. He was so embarrassed. He'd never been in a situation like this. His wife was there. She didn't know what the. She'd never been in a situation where, in the city hall, in front of all the people of the city hall, he got this award. It was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. And we were talking then. I said, and these Muslims were there, and everyone was there. And I said, this whole concept of Jews and Arabs and Christians and everyone together saving lives with technology, with motorcycles and everything. I brought this from Israel for you guys as a gift. It's a Jewish gift to the world. And it was amazing. I wish you would have been there to just see and capture a little of the Kiddush Hashem that was there.
Eli Beer, United Hatzalah, thank you so much for inspiring us with your stories and with your just incredible conduct and, you know, a living Musa Seifa. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And people could go into our website and learn more. It's israelrescue.org. And you can watch my TED Talk and share it.
Thank you, Eli.
Thank you very much.
We're going to speak about Nahal Haredi, sort of a conclusion of the last 2 weeks. You know, it started with because Rav Steinman was supposedly their backer. There are other Rosh Hashivas that signed as well. I saw letters from the great Rav from America, moved to Eretz Yisrael, the Tabas HaChoshen, and other Rabbanim, but he sort of was the one who got the most flack, certainly, for it. They put up Pashkevillim about him, etc. And by the way, I commented last week, maybe he backed down because he was afraid, and I got people screaming, oh, you're saying he was afraid? That's terrible. How could you write that? It's Fira. And I just, you know, want to remind everybody the letter from the Ar Sameach, which we have on our website, where he says many of the people who he said that, who believe that the Gimel Shvuas went away because of the Balfour Declaration, he said, are afraid to say it because people will, you know, pour their wrath on them. So there's nothing new about that. But I want to also say that Rav Steinman was a gadol that far exceeded anything to do with Nachal Haredi. I was had the honor of being in his house, and I remember his gabbai showed me that he had two milchiger spoons in the kitchen, two fleischiger spoons. He had one milchiger pot, one fleischiger pot. He said he basically he ate a tiny amount every day. His house was like the Chafetz Chaim's house. There was nothing there. Chairs, two few chairs that looked like he got them from the Salvation Army. I mean, and like Pasik Puma Migirse, the people who flew around the world with him when he was in his 80s and 90s say he never stopped learning. Yemen Velayli standing there. So he's far greater than Nachal Haredi. We only sort of backed into Nachal Haredi because of Erstein, but it's not to say, Chas V'Shalom, that this was some crowning achievement in his life. And we will have on Rabbi Shua Eichenstein, who is the big Rav Shiva in Eretz Yisrael. We've had him on before. He's a Bal Musa, he's a Rav. He's considered one of the great mechanchim in our generation. He was mekurev with the Hei Hayadiyah, very close to Rav Steinman. And his position is sort of, he backs the Luddites. As Rav Steinman said, it was for boys who were basically off the derech. We will have the founder of Nachal Haredi, Rav Tzvi Kleibanoff, and a few of his other people. It's actually the only interview we've ever had where part of it is in Yiddish because his backer doesn't speak Yiddish. The Rav on the screen is screaming, it's not true. So whoever our Yiddish speakers will put it on there. So I leave it to you to decide. But based on what Rav Eichenstein says, notwithstanding such chashuv rabbanim we've had on from Nachal Haredi, but it seems that it's certainly not a yeshiva. It's certainly a b'diavad. How much of a b'diavad, let the Olam decide. We've had callers who said they went there, and even though there is no Chil Shabbos, but the davening, it's not so geschmack, whatever. So I didn't want to leave anybody with the impression that this is a new version of the Miri Yeshiva Chas V'Shalom, right? I should say. I'm just saying it is, you know, you decide where that is. I don't really want to. You have the Edim. I say, Nachum always used to say, why is aid me p'aid pasal? Whereas here, so he says, the one who's speaking doesn't know, and the one who knows isn't speaking. You will actually hear the witnesses, you decide, let my learned audience. I do want to say something. We got a lot of calls, maybe 50 calls from pro-Satma, anti-Satma, etc. And I want to just define what where I see how this whole Zionist debate comes out, okay? So you have the Satmar Rebbe. To me, there's three camps, and the three camps are split because in each camp, there's the more radical, the less radical, the more in the middle. You have the anti-Zionism, which was the Shita HaKadosh of the Satmar Rebbe, and many of them want to see the state dismantled. We've had on both Rabbi Lefkowitz and the fellow who follows the other Satmar Rebbe who said that they want to see it handed over to the UN. Clear anti-Zionism, voting is meanest, anything to do with that is meanest, that's one. Zionism is Avodah Zarah, the Yael Moshe, the Gula of Alatzmura, etc. On the other side, you have the Mizrahi, or those who are much more pro the state of Israel, who was started off with Rav Mirzah Kain Cook, who believed it was a Schalt the Geula. We'll speak about those. And then you have the middle of the road, which I believe I'm part of, which is certainly I understand, which is the original Zionists. Were mostly Kaifrim, they were mostly Shanu Pirishniks. In a prior show, I listed off the 20 most prominent early Zionists, and practically every single one of them went to a yeshiva, et cetera, and at some point became a Shanu Pirishnik. So less mandapolik, they were Kaifrim, I certainly think it's less mandapolik. However, after the Shechita of World War II, and we saw Jews turned back and thrown back into the gas ovens because nobody wanted us, until we were dead, that is, so there was a grudging acceptance that Klal Yisrael needed a makom la neshama. And the Zionists, right, were vinishvi, they were the shluchim on some level, to provide a place for us to live. So it started off very bad, but post-World War II, and if you look at Rav Henkin, we'll get to that later, but let's start with the first cheetah, the Zionism, the the anti-Zionism of the Satma. And I believe that many of the Satmara, and I apologize in advance because how could I say that? You know, I understand better than them their position. So again, my apologies, but I'll bring some proofs. I made them. I believe that when I told Rabbi Lefkowitz that when the Satmara Rebbe said it's Avodah Zarah, I said he couldn't have believed it's Avodah Zarah because you, even though with the cast and the train they chipped in, I said you can't be Nene from an Asherah if a few Jews helped buy part of the Asherah. I said, la halacha, that wouldn't be. And you couldn't use Hadassah Hospital within their bylaws. They write everything that Tzach would believe is kfir. It's here, a purpose of the hospital is to spread, you know, bring treatment in the new land in the name of Zionism, etc., of Herzl. This is not like, you know, today there's Liberty Healthcare, some healthcare that you have to sign. I believe in, the, you know, in freedom of to be, you know, of not stressed to deem any religion. And many people today in Lakewood, they won't join that program. So I said, I don't believe it's an Avodah Zarah. I believe he meant to say, otherwise he couldn't have lived in Israel. I said, I believe he meant to say it's really, really something dangerous. And I got two letters this week that back it up. One is from Yungaman Yeshua Zucker. He said, there was a Rav in Muncie, Rav Weinfeld. He wrote Lev Lavram. He was both a big Talmud Chacham. He was a Rav. He was a Tzaddik. He has children who are Rabbanan. B'nei Yuchasner Rabbanan. And he had a debate with the Satmar Chassid. The Satmar Chassid said that the Satmar Rav said that you're, if you have tefillin, sorry, that if you vote, you're a min. He said, so go into the Satmar Rav and tell him that you have a pure tefillin that were written by Yidden B'nai Brak who voted, and whether it has a din of, say, for Torah Shekas Be'min or tefillin Shekas Be'min, and you have a din to whether you should burn them. So this guy went into the Satmar Rav and he said, should I burn my tefillin? It was written by a Seifa who voted. And the Satmar Rav started screaming, Shaita, Shaita. One thing's for sure is he couldn't deal with a fool. It's not what I meant, etc. I meant to say that it's a Dover Chamer Ma'id. Now, Yevadi, you shouldn't burn the tefillin. And I got a fellow from Eli Nadoff. We'll post both of these letters on the site, where he says he's heard this story many times. He said Rabbi Radinsky, I guess he davens there, he learns there, said over many times. He said Rabbi El Yemeya Blach, the Telzer Rosh Hashiva, the great Telzer Rosh Hashiva, was once at an Asifa, and the Satmar Rebbe was there, and many other Hashivas and Rabbanim, and he said something that was very pro-Zionist. So the Satmar Rebbe looked at him in front of Olam. He said, that's Kfira. So Rabbi Yemei Blach turned like pale, and he said, the Rufsmich HaKaifa? You're calling me a Kaifa? A Kaifa? He started shaking. So the Satmar Rebbe said, no, I don't mean that it's a Kaifa. I meant that it's Kfira. But so he said, in the Litta, when you say somebody says something Kfira, it doesn't just mean, there's no, you know, wild exaggerations. It means serious. He called me a Kaifa. He said, I'm not Michael you. So the Satmar Rebbe got upset, and he said, what do I have to do? So Rabbi Yemei Blach said, come to my yeshiva and say a shir klali, and I'll be meichel you. So the Satmar Rebbe said, I never go to some place where they have secular studies. So he said, well, you want, that's what I want. So he said, the Satmar Rebbe came to Cleveland, and he said, the Talzer Yeshiva went to the airport, he picked him up, and he said, in the taxi, he said, so now are you meichel me? He said, after the shir, I'll be meichel you. And he said a shir in Telz. So clearly he himself didn't say that if you live in Eretz Yisrael today, you're being nene from Avodah Zarah, if you go to a hospital there. He meant to say it's a very dangerous thing. It's a euphemism. And I think it's very important when we start taking, you know, words and throwing them around, it's important to understand what the true meaning was. That's my opinion. And I ask Mechila from all the Satmar Chassidim who disagree with me. Now, the second, another Shita was the other side of it was, you know, Avram Yitzchak Kohen Cook, the great Rav Cook, who embraced them pre-World War II with the Klippis, with the Kfakaifrim, and there were Rabbanim who agreed, but he was very controversial, to put it right, to be honest, even though there were many who did agree with him. And I'll tell you something fascinating that people don't know, that when the Medina was founded, there was a letter published calling it Aschalta de Geula, the beginning of the redemption. Right? Imagine how Tzibrachet and Tzeklapdin were post-Holocaust, most of Kol Yisrael was. And who calls it Aschalta Geula writes on it, 100 Rabbanim sign that it's Aschalta de Geula. Which, by the way, you know, when you go to Yeshiva today, say, how could you say 100 Rabbanim, the biggest, who are they? I'll give you some names that maybe you'd recognize. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, he wrote the Har Tzvi, certainly one of the greatest, the Shver of the Brashiv of Panovich, or Shmuel Rozovsky. Rav Chaskel Sarna, Rashiv of Hevron, in Yerushalayim, Rashiv of Chayolim, of Gershon Lapidus, Rashiv of Sasemis, Rav Shlomo David Kahana, he was the Rav of the Warsaw Ghetto, the only one. He was called the Rav of the Agunis. They say he was mater 1,000 Agunis, and not a single one came back. The Rabbanim said he was mater al Piruch HaKadosh, certainly one of the greatest of the Amalek Rabbanim who survived. Rav Zalman Saratskin, the Znaim Lotaira, Rav Yitzchak Arieli, Rosh Arieli from the mayor's grandfather, Rav Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky, right, the Rashiv of Eitz Chaim, the biggest yeshiva in Yerushalayim, Rishlami says the Zevin, Rishlami Zalman Oyabach signed on that letter. So what are you going to say? If you believe it's Aschal to the Gula, it's Kfir Rishlami Zalman signed on it. Reb Reuven Katz, the big guy from Pesach Tikva, Reb Leo Dushnitza, Reb Elia Mishkovsky, et cetera, et cetera. So clearly many believe that it was Aschal to the Gula. And then there were the middle of the road, those who didn't necessarily call it, but who supported the state, was, so you have the Satma, you had those who believed it was Chalta de Gula, and then you had those who said, look, it started off bad, but we have no choice. They're going to throw us in the ocean. We need someplace. And the one who wrote it is Rav Henke, and he wrote it in a tshuva when he saw a comment, I believe it was from somebody in the very right-wing camp, that Zechiv to be Moise Nefesh, to do what you can, to stop the Israeli government. Rav Henkin, who Rav Moshe considered the Paisik in America, Rav Henkin writes in a psak, and he says, post-World War II, he says, it's a fact that it's here, and it's a fact that it's a place for Klal Yisrael. And he said that if anybody who tries to disrupt the government, he says, is a roidif. And it's just common sense. Rav Henkin was a Paisik. Where are we going to put the 6 million Jews of Israel if the UN comes? You know what type of shechitas they'll be? I mean, just the UN just voted against Israel 100-something to 9 about Yerushalayim. It was the United States. Who was it? There was 7 islands out in someplace, I never heard of most of these islands. Each one maybe has a million of people. Everybody else, Germany, France, after the Shechitas, France, England, all against America. What would the U.S. do to protect it? So Rav Henkin said, if you try to do something to undermine Eretz Yisrael, he says, you're simply a rapist. Right? This was the opinion of Rav Henkin. Just practical, they're there, right? Forgetting about what happened, Amol, with Ben Gurion, is he? Well, what name you call him? Don't you? Herzl, etc. He said, they're there. And which is why, you know, Rabbi Vad Yosef wrote this, Rabbi Yankiv Kamenetsky, well, Print also wrote very strongly, he said, it's a place for Jews to run. We have to do, it's a bracha, it's Mechazdeh Hashem, the Rachmim of the Rabbein Shalom, that he gave us a place to go. Rav Dessler called tzaddikim, those who work in Eretz Yisrael. Look at the Rabbanim, who their whole lives were employed by the government, Rabbi Yashiv, right? Interestingly, who is Rabbi Yashiv's Masada Kedushin? Was Rav Kook. Today in the yeshiva world, they made, you know, there are svarim that are reprinted. They reprinted from Rav Hutner the Sefer. They took out Haskama from Rav Kook. They were embarrassed. He was the Masada Kedushin of Rabbi Yashiv. He was the Masada Kedushin of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. Yes, I mean, who of my listeners has a sense of humor? You know who was the Sandik of Rav Shmuel Leibach of Peleg? His Sandik was Rav Kook. He was considered the gadol. The Tzitz Eliezer's whole life worked for the thing. So what did these gedolim believe? They believed, yes, it started. It wasn't meharei kodesh. It started off. There were many of them that were minim l'maisa. It's there, and it's a makom l'anasham. And Rav Henkin said, if you do something, you disrupt it. And the only thing that I in my conversations about it, I said, you know, this was 100 years ago. This was 1950. I guess it wasn't 100 years ago. 6 years ago. Today, the biggest supporter of Torah in the world is the Israeli government. It's billions of shkalim a year, billions, that's with a B. Right? The biggest supporter of the thing. So what do I mean to say? Yes, there are certainly many kaifrim among the Zionists, and there are many that would like to, you know, be maharis, yiddishkeit, etc. But it's like nakudim, nakudim, brudim. It's a mixture of good and bad. It's not like the Amalega Zionist that for a rogue, all they wanted to do was the Asevnikis. They wanted to be Oiki Yeshivas. So those are the three opinions. Now, this is about Zionism. Now, about serving in the army, it's interesting. We said that Rav Steinman said that the boys were off the derech. Some said, no, we're going to have on today 2 Edom who said, no, he said for many. So it sounds like, you know, who is the biggest Paisik that will ever live in America till Mashiach comes, when he died, the Baal Igris Moshe, I think the world accepts him that way. There's a tshuva from the Baal Igris Moshe, it's in Yeridaya Dalet, Simon Lam and Gimel, when he talks about serving in the army. He was asked by a few yeshiva guys this very question: should we leave yeshiva to go serve in the army, being that it protects the borders? Moshe writes, even though it's an inyan gadol to serve in the army, Moshe writes, even though it's an inyan gadol, he says, but it doesn't come to limud haTorah. He says it brings the Gemara in Baba Basra, that ches, that limud haTorah. If somebody's a loy mitzvah, it protects him, it protects the world, etc. So Moshe writes, it's an inyan gadol, but better to learn in yeshiva. Seemingly from that letter, somebody who's not learning in yeshiva, it's an inyan gadol without the Gemara and Baba Basra. So this would back those who believe that Rav Steinman could say that, yes, that the Nachal Haredi does serve a purpose. I'm just shtelling to some mekaymis and halacha. But let me share with you two stories that, again, that it's become so popular to hate the state of Israel that when you hear these, or to hate the army, that when you hear these stories, you know, this is, we'll print the Makir, it's in a biography about Rav Shlomo Zalman. A boy came to Rav Shlomo Zalman, remember, he was Rav Shiva in Yerushalayim, and he said, I want to go up north to the Kfarim. You know, you go to Tzfas, you have the Arizal and the Ramak, Saltais, Pinchas Ben Yair. I mean, it's full of tzaddikim and chassidim and kedoshim. And this is Ulmole, it was nichtav, I couldn't say. He says, Shlomo Zalman said to him, when I want to be mispal in the Makam Kaddish by kedoshim, I go to Davin by a soldier who died's grave. I'll print the Makar. You could say it's Shkarim, you could call the people who wrote it in his biography. I'm just telling you. So I'm saying that this whole concept of serving in the Nachal Haredi has much more foundations than just Rav Steinman. And I leave it to you to decide how good or bad the Nachal Haredi is. We will have on, you know, the right. We will have on Hagoyin, Rav Eichenstein. We'll have the people who are at the Nachal Haredi. You decide. We put all the calls, or almost all the calls, on our website. You can listen to them, both those who agree, those who strongly disagree, and are shy with me. So let's go to our wonderful guest.
We have on the phone with us, from Yerushalayim, Hagoyin Rabbi Yeshua Eichenstein, who's Rosh Yeshiva of Yad Aaron. He's also the Chassid Bei Nisi of the Rav Yerushalayim, Rabbi Tzal Zalti. And he was the Makurv with the Hei Hayadiya to the Gadol HaDor, Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Welcome, Rav Eichenstein.
Okay, thank you.
So, Rav Eichenstein, there is some confusion as to exactly what Rav Steinman's position was about Nachal Haredi. Was it for everybody? Was it for
definitely not.
Okay, was it for Shababnikis? Was it for boys who
people
sort of...
People are going off the derech.
So if you have a bachur in yeshiva, he's not interested in learning. He's just sort of wandering the hallways. He has no interest in yeshiva. And his parents would come to Rav Steinman and they said, look, our son does not want to be in yeshiva. We don't know what to do with him. He would maybe like to go to the army, but he's Shaima Shabbos, but he just has no interest. What would Rav Steinman say?
I would think he would say there's other misgarot for him today.
There are
other misgarot that are less... Mechayev than the regular yeshivas, and they could find themselves there, or teach them a mikzora. There's things that for today to learn a trade or something, some sort. Nachal was made for people that are mamish going off the derech.
So all the people, I guess, who went to him, these children basically were going to become fry, and that was what it was for.
That's right.
And why? And so explain the logic. If you're going off the derech, yes, you're not going off the derech, not.
Because other misgarot for people that are just not interested in learning.
And
somebody going off
the
derech, the Nachal Haredi could help him.
And why did he feel the Nachal Haredi was not for those who are not going off the derech?
Because sof kol sof, you're in a certain misgarot, which is not a 100% perfect misgarot, to say the least. It's not 100% perfect. For people that aren't just learning, the other misgarot for them.
Now, was Rav Steinman against going to the army if Nachal Haredi would have been sort of perfected where it was at a higher level, I guess? Would have he been allowed it? Was it a political against Nahal Haredi, or just practically? Look, they don't have their act together.
Practically.
Now, we had on two different rabbanim from Nahal Haredi. We had on Rabbi Danziger, and we had on one of the founders, David Hager. And he said the boys have to go to the davening three times a day, or they get locked up.
But there's no. There's,
and
there's
they
no.
learned they finished Masechtas. He said there's no women on the base. If you're caught with anything not Shmira Shabbos, you're thrown out. He said it's really a serious. I said, but you do have boys who go off. He says, yeah, like every yeshiva, there's no place is perfect. But he seemed to imply that they really have their act together. Was he exaggerating
in your opinion? It's not simple. It's not simple. Today's day and age, the nisyonos are so big. It's very not simple. It's not simple. The nisyonos are very, very big today.
But they're big wherever you go. I mean, they're big if you go to work.
That's
right. They're big if you're in yeshiva. They're big if you're out of yeshiva. So
there are big nisyonos. You have to find the proper misgeret for everybody that might be going off the derech. You have to find the right misgeret for everyone. Now, it's a certain misgeret for a certain type of boy that's going off the derech.
So you're saying when they make it sound like it's a place of where the boys, for the most part, go out better, and then it's Allah, you're saying it's relative to who they are, but it's still...
That's right.
Okay. Do you understand then why there's such a strong opposition to Nahal Haredi if he meant it for those boys?
Some people don't understand it. And some people are just against the army because it's army. You're with the Medina if you go to any type of army. So not everybody understands the proper thing. The so-called story is that one big Rosh Yeshiva came to a Baron Leib and he asked him, what's Nahal Haredi? What is it? So he told him that I'll send to you all the mothers that come to me. If you have a better Eitzah for them, so Vakasha, find an Eitzah for them. There is no better Eitzah for these type of Bochrim, at that time at least, than Nahal Haredi. That doesn't mean it's good for anybody that's not learning.
Uh-huh.
The Sakonis are very big. It's not simple.
Explain the Sakonis and Nahal Haredi vis-a-vis a boy who would, let's say, go to the workplace, a miskeret where they teach him a job. How would they be different?
Because, first of all, you're at home most of the day, part of the day. You have the shmir of the home. You're not under a... You could deal with a bochur, not in the army, in a way that's different than in an army. It's different. The different avirat, different ruach, it's not simple.
But Rabbi Eichenstein, couldn't an argument be made that when people go to work today, it's invariably they have to work with women, or if it's girls, invariably they have to work with men. They will have unfettered, untrammeled access to the internet, which is extremely dangerous, right? For somebody who's just bored or searching, whereas in the army, there's no women, there's no internet, there's no gambling. There's no pornography. I mean, couldn't an argument be made it's a much safer environment than letting somebody out on the street?
Out on the street is a sakona, no question about it. But today, many of the places that work with Haredim have a closed internet.
Okay. So if somebody were to go out to work, do you see that as more or less dangerous than going to something like Nahal Haredi?
I can't answer the question because you have to know where he's working, what's his environment, what environment is Nahal Haredi.
I mean, he's working in Tel Aviv, he's working in...
That other place is very dangerous.
He's working in New York City. I mean, you know,
dangerous. That's very dangerous. No question about it.
So would Nahal Haredi be less dangerous than working in Tel Aviv or New York or one of these places?
Depends where he's working. We talk about an Eretz Yisrael where there are places to work to have good miskarot, and not exactly the army.
So Rabbi Eichenstein, we want to thank you very much for your time and for your clarification as on this topic.
I didn't add too much to the clarification.
Okay, but it certainly gave us a different view.
You have to know the situation here in Eretz Yisrael, and to understand what Nahal Haredi is, what the dangers are, There's a reason why there's dangers here in the Nachal Haredi, which is in America they don't exactly understand it. But there are many dangers in it, and it's made for a certain type of bocher.
Could you explain the dangers so us who's far away could try to understand them? Make believe it was a Shver Rajba or something. Give us a beer.
Because
what's the danger?
Many of the boys going there, you're in a definite environment of a certain type of precursor oil. Many of the boys going there are looking for this precursor oil. You're in a surrounding, but you're with many bochum are involved in precursor oil, and it can help them not to go further off, but it has its dangers.
Okay, thank you very much for clarifying it, and thank you very much, Rabbi.
Okay, so
it'll
only be good, and how bad it should be, tell us.
We have on the phone with us from Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Tzvi Kleibenov, who's co-founder and president of the Nachal Haredi. He's a musmach of Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, the Edom of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, certainly one of the biggest paiskim in the world today. Welcome, Rav Kleibenov.
Shalom Aleichem.
Rav Kleibenov, a letter was circulated of approximately 16 years ago, I believe it's dated Tafshin Samach Aleph, that a letter from Rav Steinman, allegedly to Rav Dan Segel, in which he writes that the Nachal Haredi is for boys who are chayvei krisis. That it's seeming to imply that it's not for your average guy who doesn't have zitz flesh, is looking for something to do in his life, is draying around, but it's only literally for the guys who are off the derech, the fry, etc. Could you tell us whether you, in your opinion, as somebody who I believe Metro Baralebi could tell us a number of times, whether this was his opinion or not, or in some perspective on that letter?
I don't know if the letter is a real letter or it's not a real letter. What I can tell you is from the number of times that I went into to Rav Aaron Leib Zatzal, I remember very well one of the first times in the beginning of the program when word was getting out of the beginning of the Nachal Haredi. We went together with Rav Dan Segel, and we went into Rav Aaron Leib. There was some opposition that became public. We showed him some of the posts that were being made against what we were doing, and he shrugged it off completely by saying that who reads these magazines except for groups of people that speak Lashon Hara. He didn't litiyachis to it, what we say, a kihuz, numbers of parents that went to Rav Aaron Leib for questions, what they should do with their children. He definitely advised them that the Nachal Haredi was a good place for them. And any number of times that I spoke with him, he had ample time to be able to say or view a negative type of attitude that this was for only the types of boys which you described. Never did he ever mention such a thing. I can tell you another very interesting thing. I went to see years ago Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, and he himself told me a very interesting story. He told me the reason that he himself thinks that Nachal Haredi is a very good thing is simply because he was at a simcha in Eretz Yisrael. He was at a bris. He was there, and Rav David Soloveitchik was there. Rav Aaron Leib was there, and he was witness to Rav David Soloveitchik coming up to Rav Aaron Leib and giving him shtachim about his support for the Nachal Haredi. So it was already known that he was supporting the Nachal Haredi. He went up to him. He went up to him, and he said to him, "Why are you supporting the Nachal Haredi?" And Rav Aaron Leib answered him by asking him, "Tell me, Rav David, how many mothers came crying to you about their children this week?" And obviously, Rav David didn't have much to say about that because that doesn't happen. It was a rhetorical question. Rav Aaron Leib immediately said, "By me there were 11." And Rav Shmuel told me that was the end of the conversation. So it was clear to him that he was in support of this. The boys that attend Nachal Haredi are across the spectrum. We have boys, yes, that have issues with Shmiras HaMitzvos, although the Mekeret of Nachal Haredi only gives them chizuk. And we have wonderful young men that simply for one reason or another don't find their place being Kreis Labeis HaMedrash and find their place extremely well and extremely excel in the Nachal Haredi.
Now, do you know of cases of boys who came to Nachal Haredi upon the advice of Rabbi Aaron Leib, even though they were not Chevei Krisis, they were good old, you know, frum boys, except that they didn't enjoy learning, they didn't have any zitzfleish, they were just sort of lost, they were looking for a mission in life. Can you say
that? Without question, the answer is yes.
And you know it on more than one occasion? Could you say so? It's Adis, it's more than one boy, it's a few boys?
Well, yes, definitely.
Okay, now, we had on the phone a gentleman, quote-unquote, an Askin from Satma, Brisk, etc., and he said that, you know, notwithstanding what I told him, we had people say that there's, you know, that the Shmira Shabbos, that they learned, that there's an avira of respect for Torah of Yerushalayim. He said it's a Baba Maisa, and if you go in there, you'll see that it's a Hefkevelt, etc. Could you talk about what it's like being in a camp? Like, what is the matzav? Is it more like a yeshiva, or is it more like a frat party?
It's not a yeshiva, and it's not a frat party. The Nachal Haredi base has a Torani environment. That means that there are minyonim. That means that there are a staff of nothing less than 17 rabbonim that daily visit all the bases across the country. Today there are over 20 bases across the country that have Nachal Haredi soldiers. But there are rabbonim that visit, go to give chizuk, go to give shiurim. There's a rav, an outstanding rav of the battalion, who we work in hand with. It's an amazing, amazing avira. And like I said before, you have boys that come from in different stages. Any boy between the ages of 18 and 21, you're seeing ups and downs. I think it's true of much of our youth. But all in all, these are boys that take advantage of the environment. The army is a givaldic kli. Given a Torani environment, it teaches responsibility, accountability, authority. It's a magnificent tool for these boys, and they grow tremendously. And I would say that of boys that have still connection with their parents, which is the far majority, I would say probably over 80%, those boys, I would say 80 to 85% of those boys are even more mitchazek during their service than they were when they came in.
So in a way, you're running both a kiruv yeshiva there, as well as doing mitzvahs of the mitzvah of the Mohammed Smith for protecting Eretz Yisrael and giving the boys some type of mission in life. Is that what you would say?
100%. I wouldn't want to say...
Rabbi Kleibenhoff, instead of me leading the witness... Why don't you say, if you had to say in one paragraph, the elevator pitch, what is the mission of Nachal Haredi?
The mission of Nachal Haredi is to give a young Haredi man who, for whatever reason, doesn't find his place in the Kreisle Beis HaMedrash, to provide him with an environment within the IDF that allows him to serve as a full combat soldier or as a support soldier in an environment that does not compromise his Haredi way of life. It gives him the tools to move on, to be a Ben Torah, to learn skills, to get a job, to go into the workplace, to support his family, provide it the kavod, and to carry on the way of life that he was brought up.
So, Rabbi, one last question. I know it's late for you there. It's Erev Shabbos. Given that you are both a musmuch of Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, you also have a master's of computer engineering from Boston University, I want to ask the following question. If you had to, how would you compare the environment sending your child to Nachal Haredi to sending to the workplace in New York today? Where is a child in a safer environment?
100% in the Nachal Haredi.
Thank you very much. The Rabbeinu Shalom should give you kayach to continue in Yavaydis HaKadosh.
Yes, HaKadosh. Thank you so much. A guten Shabbos. Kol tov.
Shabbos. We have on the phone with us Akiva Marks, Rabbi Akiva Marks, who has a blog called The Mystical Path. He's in Beit Shemesh in Eretz Yisrael. He's from the Hasidei Chabad. And he writes a blog about Kabbalah. Welcome, Rabbi Akiva.
Thank you, thank you.
I understand you have a son who was in the Nachal Haredi. Could you tell us your experience there?
Well, I mean, this was a number of years ago now. It's about 7 years ago that he went in. He came out of Yeshiva in Tzfat and went into the Israeli army through Nachal Haredi. And
he was in the Tzfat Yeshiva of Chabad, is that it? There's a very great Chabad Yeshiva there, is that correct?
There were a few different ones. He was in Rabbi Ormelan's Yeshiva, which actually later moved to New Jersey.
Okay. Okay.
And, well, I mean, initially the experience was pretty rough. You know, Nachal Haredi is a group of frum guys, and it's a program targeted at, you know, a religious chevra, specifically a Haredi chevra in Eretz Yisrael. And I think they had a lot of process in learning along the way. At the stage that he went in, you know, the part of the program was still kind of rough. You know, when it came to issue, you know, I'll give you an example. The base he went on for training, part of the Nachal Haredi program is they guarantee Mahadran food. But they didn't have the Mahadran kitchen koshered. So for the first 3 weeks he went in, they were eating tuna every day, every meal.
I got
you. So on those kinds of issues, it was a relatively rough experience initially. Of course, the army is not yeshiva, and it's not kehila. It's not in the community. So it's quite a foreign experience for anyone who steps into it.
Okay. What else was it like? Give us some more feedback.
I would say that, you know, obviously the whole army experience is a bit earth-shaking for anyone who goes in, whether they're religious or not, because suddenly you've got a lot of people yelling at you and telling you what to do and, you know, setting patterns in your life, and they want to teach you how to do things their way. When you're training for infantry combat, that's relatively important because they're teaching you how to have enough discipline to react to commands without thinking, because God forbid if you're in an, you know, a combat situation, that's absolutely necessary. But obviously that's not an experience that most people undergo or are ready for. It's rough. It's upsetting, and you know, but that's what an army is. That's, you know, it's, they have got to train people up to do a very difficult job to protect people.
Now, were there women? You know, women, were there women on the base? Did they have to listen
no.
to women singing? Like, to give us a. Like,
well, the Nachal Haredi program has specific rules about that, and they are enforced relatively strongly. The bases that Nachal Haredi, that all the Haredi programs train on, for the most part, are men only. Either the bases are men only, or the whole sections they're in are men only. Their trainers are men only. Their commanders are men only. That's part of the definition of their program.
Are the trainers and bosses and whatever colonels, generals, are they all from in Nachal Haredi?
Well, some yes, some no. Some are from, some are Dati Lumi, and some are not. Because, you know, in the younger years of the program, where are you going to get a from experienced officer from, or a Haredi experienced officer from? They're not there.
Now,
so that's,
has it changed since then?
It has changed since then. One of the interesting parts that I never wrote about on the blog is at the end of my son's mandatory service, they offered the members of his unit, including himself, that were successful, that had a good record, to stay in. Because the Israeli army, after you finish your draft time, they may offer to give you a job. So you become a professional soldier, it becomes a job, you get a paycheck, you may get to go home on weekends, depending on the particular duty. And they offered him to stay and transfer over to the Army Rabbanut as a Nagad Kashrut. The Nagadei Kashrut are responsible for the kashrus of the food on the bases. They're responsible for the religious services, meaning, you know, for example, building the sukkahs, giving out Hanukkah candles, and so forth. On his current base, He's responsible for the base and 10 outposts. He built 12 sukkahs this year, etc. And so they actually offered him to stay in, and he stayed in, and he's now been in the Army for 7 years, and you know, the last 4 years as a professional soldier getting a paycheck.
Now,
and serving as...
With your son's experience, did he come out, or when he finished his first 2 years, was he more frum, less frum? Did it have a good hashpa on him, a bad hashpa? Try to give us a feeling of what it's like.
Okay, well, I mean, I think it's a mix. Meaning in my son's case, I think he came out a little bit stronger than he went in. There's definitely some young men that it gives them an opportunity to be out of home and away from their kehila and away from their yeshiva environment, and it gives them the opportunity to go free, and they, you know, happily throw off their kippah and have a good time. And there's some young men, I mean, these are stories of some that my son gave me that went along with him, that came in and they were pretty weak and they had no discipline in their lives. You know, these are probably the guys that are having a lot of difficulty in yeshiva, and some of those come out in a much better situation. One of his good friends went in the Army and actually went through some difficult combat experiences, but he came out much, much stronger than he went in. So, you know, the experience differs depending on the person.
Now, those who are adamantly against it, they say that it opens up the doors for yeshiva boys to become, you know, leave yeshiva, to become irreligious, to lose their values, etc. Do you feel that they're right or they're wrong?
Yes. it means that both situations apply. As I said in the beginning, when you take a young man out of the yeshiva and you take him out of the kehila, you take him out of his family, and you take him out of his shul, and you put him in a very foreign environment, because, you know, it doesn't matter what you are, what your situation is, whether you're coming from a Litvish yeshiva or a Chabad background or a Sephardi background or whatever, you put yourself in this completely foreign situation. You're in a mix of different people that you don't normally interact with, and put in circumstances that you don't normally interact with. For some people, that's going to be a tremendous nisayon. For other people, it's going to be an opportunity for them to become more mature and become stronger. So, you know, like many things in life, differences and change are going to be a challenge. And, you know, the Army's a hard change. As a very practical example, one of my son's duties now in his current role is they send him through training on dealing with people that die. If they die in the Army, it's his job to go through the collection process and handle the body. That's part of what the Nagad Kashrut does. That's a very shocking thing to have to train for and practice for.
I'm saying those who are against it, do you understand them?
I certainly understand them. You know, in some ways, it's not, you know, it's not so different from saying them also being concerned that people are going to go out and take a full-time position. Because, you know, if you're used to being in the four walls of the yeshiva and suddenly you're in a working environment and it's a mixed environment and you're encountering all kinds of different people, that's a shock to the system. And for some people, that shock is going to shake some foundations. And the Army's more of a shock to the system because it has to shake foundations and set different patterns, which for some people is going to be difficult. For some people, it lets them break away with that they wouldn't do otherwise. And for other people, it will give them some discipline and order, which may be a positive. So I understand people being afraid of it very much. And of course, not even that, I've had this conversation with some people in my shul, and just the thought of their child is going to go and face, you know, God forbid, but may face life and death circumstances, that's also something that we would certainly prefer to avoid. Nobody wants to send their children off where they may be shot at. God forbid.
Thank you very much for sharing your experience with us, Rabbi Akiva. We appreciate it so much.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Call to bye-bye.
From somebody who was actually a Rav at Nachal Haredi. We never had Yiddish, but it's at the end. It's fine. You don't have to listen to it if you don't want. But this person speaks with so much passion about it, and he's there every day. I figured it'd be worth listening to. So Here you are.
Yesh li alakav, shutaf, how do you say, the partner in crime? The Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Chaim. Lo daver anglit, avo daver o yiddish.
Shalom, shalom.
Shalom, shalom, Rabbi Bar Chaim.
אני תמיד מגדיר את רבי יצחק באמת, הוא האבא של הנחל החרדי. שאלתי אותו, והוא יגיד לך, תגיד לו מה שאמרת לי, רבי יצחק.
אני הייתי אצל רבי, אתה מדבר יידיש יותר טוב או עברית?
לא, עברית.
שניהם, אני מדבר יידיש, עברית, אבל יידיש, אני חושב, רוב העולם שלי מדבר יידיש יותר מעברית אולי. תגיד ביידיש.
איך אין זו נחל יורף יידיש? איך מגבין מה רבי הלב? לכל הפוחס דריימון. אין נראות, בדלת תמוז רגי וייזמאים את רבדון סגל. רבדון סגל, וייזמאים את רבדון סגל.
Yeah.
עוד הגזוגת רבדון, דוסק וייזמאים את המיינסי פן פר 19 יור.
Yeah, we were there together.
תזדו היית בוסביל אלפן די קינדר. וזה נשתם די ישיבי, אין זה תהי נשת אוף גור נשת, וגן עוד נשתם מלטר. מדף עם שטרן, אוט רבדונג אין פבוז דפנים שטר אז רבדונג גזוק או בצקן מחנה מחלוקס או תרגישוויג נשגזוק גורנשט דנוך דם איך בנרויז גגון פן
רבדונג איך פשטיין איש איז וסו את הגמיינט איז וסו את רבדונג סגל גמיינט
רבדונג סגל וולצול אבל רב שמול אויר בחו גזוק דרך אם איך גי וטר איך גי מח איך מח דם נחל חרדי אוט רבדונג גגוק מר ערשטב נכון בגן טרבדון תוכנין, צגית זך. ואיך בגן בגן צגדוי לישראל, ברב ניסים קרליץ, שיבוד לחיים ארוכים, ברב דויב יופה, ברב חיים פנחל שיינברג, ברב וולבה, ברב סימור נדיסקי וכל תראה. אל לגדוי זו נדיסקי, הגות זך.
אוקיי, אחד דפני השאלה. סדו, הרי סקי קומן הבריף,
Okay, der brief is arot mufarsin ivyor. I vosi choget vegen
den... Nee, the brief is from Tofshin Samach Aleph, ich meine, nein?
Tofshin?
Und er sagt in the brief... Nein, in the brief, sa brief zu Rabdon Segal, und er schreibt as fachaiwe krisis, as er sagt er, der Nachal Charedi is fachaiwe krisis.
Er sich zu, gut muss er sogar.
Ja.
Er sich zu.
Ja.
אין מזוג לן ארסט אינוקי מלויקי וודום, נשנו נוקי פנדי בנדיט נמי אישורים. זו גבוסי גבייז, גבייז הגרויסי אפגולה אין קיקר השאבס. אין דגנצה פייר גבייז נחקגן רבדון דמרושי רבר הלית. ועל אר אלט פנדר ועל אר נשת הרוס גבייז נחקגן לחרדי in the ganze zeit mogimotim lachatsu oto ze lagoyz gem et brief a kegn erot nishbot aus gem a kegn is ot is rebdon fatz beruhigen de matzev ot lagoyz gem a brief in rebar ken zandus gevein de matz ze is rebdon gevot leinen dem brief in de afgune ot menem nish gelost un leinen val mogivot pushet vater shelfen rebar leinen מותנים שאתם גילות הראיתם דם בריף. אלייז דם בריף. אין דם בריף שטייט, אז דה נחל חיים זה כבר חי וקריסס, איז כן דם צברוי דם מצב דמוס, עותרים גשרים ביזך.
אוקיי,
איזה... איך גלייבש את האמס. איך גלייבש, איך גלייבש את האמס זה כזך. אז רבר אליף, בוסק ואיזה איך שולם. ארוד גליס מי נאמבר, ארצח צו. Yeah. Und gewiss mein Gamber, wenn gewiss, wenn gewiss, wo sie geht in der Reihe, ob sie ungeklingelt sind mir. So haben nicht gesucht, kein Schim Wort dagegen machen.
Rabbi Yitzchak, du weißt Menschen, was hat geschickt zu Nachal Charedi, was sind ja, nicht gewinnt, Chaiwe Krisis, was sind gewinnt, Frumme Bacher?
Aber, Frumme, ja. Wie kann, sagst du, entschuldigst, Reb David, wie kann man wissen, was ist Chaiwe Krisis?
Ich darf pushen entfern der Mensch, ich darf an AIDS. Du kennst, wie viel Bochrim hat Rabaren Leib, was du kennst, hat er geschickt zu Nachal Charedi, was an ihn gewinnt, Fummer Bochrim, was hat ein Pushen nicht gehabt, kein Sitzfleisch lernen in Yeshiva, und er hat gesagt, drehen ich darüber, wie er leider gehe. Wie viel Bochrim er gewinnt, du kennst zwei Bochrim, also drei Bochrim, fünf, wie viel?
Jetzt auf den Namen kenne ich zwei Bochrim.
Good. Okay.
No.
Good, Rabbi Kleibanov, you could say this now, that there's two Bachrim that are, okay? Rabbi Yitzchak, Agresi Ashikayach, okay?
So in closing, what do I believe? Yes, I'm an Egeya B'davar. I go with the middle route. I go with Rav Moshe. I'll go with Reb Shlomo Zalman. I think that protecting the borders is very important. I believe it's a Mohammed Spitzfus before in the Rambam. Should Yeshiva Bachram do it? Well, if Yeshiva Bachram did it, you know, Reb Moshe writes, first of all, it's Megan Torah, and second of all, what would happen to our Torah? That's a debate. I'm not going to take a position on that. But I believe that anybody who believes that if we gave it over to the UN, we opened our borders, chas v'chalila, there would be such a shechita. So yes, those who protect the borders, it is a Mohammed's mitzvah. Like Rav Eichenstein said, yes, we do owe them hakaras hatayiv. Eichenstein is straight down the middle. My Rebbe Reb Chaim Shmulevitz certainly held that way. I believe most of the Rabbanim, and you could go on our site, we have at least 100 Rabbanim who signed that it's a halt of the Geul, etc., that they believe that it was a tremendous Rachmei Shemayim that we had Eretz Yisrael. Should somebody send their child to Nahal Haredi? Well, it depends. If the child is really struggling, he's shy of like you, then it's certainly an option. And exactly what Nahal Haredi looks like, you decide. I have no opinion. Have a wonderful week. This is David Lichtenstein for Headlines Radio, Yeshiva Shalmaila.